Welcome to Doom. This is your host, Timmy Doom. Today's episode, I'm flying solo. That's right. On my docket for today, leprechauns and black people. What's the link? Also, giving a movie review of a film that's yet to be released called Trick or Treat, horror movie. More about Obama and the She-Hulk, the Peter David run of She-Hulk. I want to talk about that a little bit. So just chill, enjoy the show, and I don't know, man. We'll get some soy milk or something. Sit back and relax and enjoy this. My first question is, what's the connection between black people and leprechauns? Yes, there is a connection between black people and leprechauns, and I would like to know what it is. In the early 90s, I heard a story, you know, how people tell stories about being, you know, being on drugs or the time they took hallucinogenics and they saw, you know, like LSD, they dropped acid or whatever, and they, whatever they saw, they tell you, oh man, the walls were melting and all this shit. Well, you know, white people told me plenty of those stories, but one black person told me a story of his friend who was also black dropping acid, and he saw a leprechaun at his feet. Okay, that was the chief hallucinatory thing, was a leprechaun. This Negro didn't see nothing melting. He didn't, the room wasn't spinning. He wasn't flying. He just saw a leprechaun tugging at his cuff of his pants. Another black person who I don't know at all, who was totally disconnected from the first incident in the early 2000s, I heard another story about another black person who said they too saw a leprechaun when they dropped acid. Then, just a couple of years ago, there was a news report that is on the web, on YouTube. And, of course, it was put there because the black people in the report look ignorant as hell. So, of course, they had to put it on YouTube. Anytime black people just look like shit and look stupid as fuck, it's going to be on the internet. Just type stupid black people and you'll probably find a ton of videos. Anyway, it was a poor, a ghetto neighborhood in down south somewhere. And, yeah, there, you know how some communities, they saw UFOs in this community, or Area 51 is known for UFOs. Metropolis, there's a place called Metropolis, a small town in the south, and they have people come in, tourists come in, because they have all these Superman memorabilia and statues and shit around town. You know, a town is just known for something. With this little black community, is now known for black people who saw leprechauns. Okay, these are ghetto as black people, ghetto. Okay, yet they saw, out of all things in the world, they saw a leprechaun. They didn't see Jesus or Mary, they saw a leprechaun. And well, you just have to see the news report for the ignorance. Okay, however, ignorant or not, it's still black people being obsessed with leprechauns. My final case, my final piece of evidence that black people and leprechauns have a connection, the movie Leprechaun, okay, is, you know, it was big on video, I guess, because they made 5 of them. But the thing that struck me is that they had a leprechaun in the hood. It was like number 3 or 4. I think it was number 3. They had leprechaun in space. They had everything else, but leprechaun in the hood. Out of all the places to go to, leprechaun in the hood. He's about the only horror character that visited the hood. And it was such a success. A couple of sequels later, he went back to the hood. So that's amazing that they made 2 of this shitty string of movies. The first one was so big that they said, we got to make another one. Another leprechaun going back to the hood. It was such a success. The black people love leprechauns. Okay, leprechauns and black people, there's some kind of connection there, and I'm not sure what it is. And I'm hoping that someone could tell me what the connection between black people and leprechauns are. Now, I saw a movie a few nights ago called Trick or Treat. It was a, you know, it was a preview of a movie. It was a shame that this movie, which is Halloween, it's like a Halloween theme movie, horror movie. It was produced by Bryan Singer. And according to James, I guess he says that the producers and the movie studio got in an argument, a tiff. And lo and behold, the movie studio has pushed the movie date back. It was supposed to come out October 7th, the perfect time for Halloween. And to me, this is a perfect Halloween movie. It would have been great. It would have made a lot of money around that time, I think. And it's a decent enough movie. But it was pushed. Now it's pushed back indefinitely. We don't know when it's going to come out. But they showed a preview of it. So it's probably going to come out soon. I like it because it's harks back to the days of the anthology. I haven't seen a horror anthology on TV or in the movies in a long time. Okay? And they did it Creepshow style. In other words, well, actually at the beginning, the only reference to a comic book is at the beginning. It's like the Trick or Treat stories are supposed to be part of a comic book series, I guess. But there's no, in between the stories, there's no comic books, like there's no comic book pages or anything like that, like in Creepshow. But at the beginning of the movie, we see comic book panels from scenes from the movie. So anyway, yeah, four good stories. It starts out good. You know, it ain't the greatest thing in the world. Oh, it's not the greatest movie in the world, but it stars Anna Paquin once again as the neophyte young girl who's just coming into the world, and you know, she's around a group of friends, her older sister and friends who are a couple of years older than her. She's the sweet young girl who's, you know, exploring the world. She's the virgin, and they're trying to de-virginize her. And once again, she's playing that character. I wonder how long she's got to play that character. Okay, because her ass is looking old. She looked older than the girl who's playing her older sister. And the other girl, all the other girls was hot except for her. Okay, she looks weird to me. Got a weird mouth, weird eyes. Anyway, it's an interesting story. It just, yeah, that's an okay story. But the ending of that has been done many times in, you know, anthology stories. So that one wasn't spectacular. But because it had some hot chicks in it, some really hot chicks, especially a fine-ass black sister, yeah, then it does deserve a thumb up. Oh, and this will be four stories. The first story is just a wraparound story. Actually, it ain't even a wraparound. It's just at the beginning. And it's done. It's done in the first few minutes of the beginning. And it stretches out a little too long. It's just about a woman and her boyfriend coming home from the Halloween festivities. And she's cleaning up the yard. And, you know, it's just a little couple arguing. And I like the ending of this little story because this bitch, she's ugly, and her face, she's got a bitch face. So at the end of the story, her bitch face gets what she deserves. Good horror stuff. But the stories, oh, there's a couple other stories. Oh, one about a principal who he has a little side hobby of murder. He's a serial killer, and yeah, basically that's it. He's a serial killer, and he's a school principal. But all this takes place in one night. His story is kind of okay. I guess these stories are all kind of okay. The last story deals with a guy, an old guy, who did something in his past. I know there's a couple more stories. Okay. Actually, there's more than four stories. Because they count the story of the man and his girlfriend at the beginning as a full story, but that's not really a story. one of the stories. That's just the opening. But the main stories are the girl who's trying to find love. That's Anna Paquin. The principal who's a serial killer on Halloween night. This old man who is attacked, okay, by the mascot character of the story, Sam. And this is the reason that pushed me over why I like it. Because, you know, a lot of movies have tried to make their own Jason or Freddy. You know, there's been a lot of serial killer characters that had gimmicks. And they're supposed to catch on, but they never caught on. But this character, whether he catches on or not, I like him. He's Sam. He's the spirit of Halloween. If you do something that's anti-Halloween, he's going to bust your ass. Like if you refuse to hand out candy, or if you don't recognize Halloween and have the Halloween shit up and keep your lanterns lit all night long for Halloween, then you are susceptible to this particular demon. And he looks like a little kid. If you're just looking at the kids walking along at trick-or-treating that night, you'd think he's one of them. Except his costume was a little bit too creepy. But he's like a kid with a pumpkin head. But he has a sack over a round pumpkin head. It's a great costume. It's a great bad guy or, you know, horror, fantasy, horror character. Sam. I like Sam. Okay. Oh, he has a little lollipop that is, you know, he took a bite out of it and now it's like a sickle or a, you know, a weapon. So, yeah, I like Sam. And that the last story deals with him being chased around or him chasing around the old guy around his house, which is to me reminiscent of the Trilogy of Terror with Karen Black where she's chased around by the voodoo doll. Same thing. None of these are spectacular, including the third story, which is just a group of teenagers play a prank on another teenager who's slightly retarded. So you know what's going to happen to them. Okay, so it's just standard, you know, classic horror story stuff. You know, the a-holes get theirs in the end. Trick or treat. I recommend it. It's decent, you know. It's a decent little story, and I'm going out to get me a Sam doll right about now. Okay, everybody done lost their damn mind. Okay, my cousin sent me, you know, an email today. What day is it? It's like, I don't know, it's like the 11th or something, November 11th. Election was a week ago today. Well, not a week ago tomorrow. It's Monday. And my cousin, I love her and everything. She sent me she sent a bunch of people this email that said, Obama is president. It's a new day. Which is, it was a link to a YouTube video of Will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas on an Oprah Winfrey show singing a damn song called It's a New Day because of Barack Obama's president. And he's jumping up and down singing It's a New Day. It's a new day. And in the background, there's a video edited mostly with his face, which no one wants to see. But then it's intercut with pictures of Obama hugging people and people all around the world. And now it's a new day. Have people lost their goddamn mind? I mean, it's a, you know, we got another president. Okay, when Bill Clinton was president, voted president, president-elect in 92, people were happy. They were happy just like they're happy now because, you know, it's a new changeover. And things were a little better under Clinton because we wasn't in a goddamn war. Okay, and everybody you say, no, you know what, Bush, you know, people actually had the nerve to fucking say, you know, George Bush was a good president. You know why? Because after our initial attack, there was no more terrorist attack in this nation, in this country. And I want to say to them, you fucking idiot, there were no terrorist attacks before he was president since 1944, I think it was, in Pearl Harbor. Okay, he's the motherfucker who said when CIA and FBI intelligence came to him talking about there's evidence that there may be a terrorist upcoming pending terrorist attack on our country, and he said, okay, we'll consider your ass covered now. In other words, you told me, now leave me the fuck alone. And I remember months before September 11th, 60 Minutes had a report with a guy who was former Secretary of Defense, I believe, of our country, saying, yeah, the terrorist attack is imminent, and he's going through all these scenarios of what could happen. And he didn't, you know, he didn't bring up the towers being blown up, but he brought different scenario attack. But it, he knew it was imminent, and he was saying it on motherfucking 60 Minutes. But yet, they couldn't stop that terrorist attack. The dude, Uzawi, or whatever the fuck his name was, that fucking bastard, one of the terrorists who came here and wanted to learn to fly, but not how to land at flight schools. They were saying, oh yeah, we just don't want to learn how to fly, and we don't need the landing part. Okay, that's when the people who run those schools called the FBI, and they found out this guy wanted to partake in the terrorist attack. They had him before September 11th, and they were sitting on him. So, yeah, I mean, common sense would tell you he ain't alone. So they knew what was going on. Well, I ain't going to say that. I'm just going to say it could have been prevented, talking about there hasn't been a terrorist attack since 9/11 because of Bush. How about this? There hasn't been a terrorist attack in this country since World War II until Bush took office. Anyway, yeah, Bush was a bad president. Okay, and I think this guy is going to do good, or he's going to do better than to have McCain and Palin in office, I think. He's got Biden behind him. That's fine and dandy, but it's still another day in America. If you're a broke Negro, shiftless, lazy Negro now, most likely you're going to be one at the end of this term. If your ass is rich now, most likely you're going to be rich at the end of the term, unless you have some kind of stupid business that, you know, fluctuates very, very precariously on the economy. If you're poor now, you know, you may become rich, but it ain't going to be because Barack Obama is in office. Okay, so wise people just went nuts. I'm looking on the internet, people in Kenya and other parts of Africa, and I know his father is Kenyan, Barack Obama's father is Kenyan, but they crying and hugging each other. No, your life ain't gonna change. Okay, that's it. I mean, your life ain't gonna change. And my cousin is sending me this video of Will I Am, who is performing a song about It's a New Day. And I know why Oprah chose him, because he's like one of the great poets since Maya Angelou, because he wrote a song called My Humps for Fergie to sing. With that lyric, what you gonna do with all that ass inside those jeans? So he was the perfect person to sing a song about It's a New Day in a new era for America, because he wrote a song about Fergie's ass barely fitting inside her jeans. And now he's jumping up and down on the stage with his raspy voice as Oprah is like barely, it's kind of shaking, and Kingsley is on my show talking about he's feeling the warm afterglow of Barack Obama being elected, and people talking about it is different, it is a change. And black people on the calling up the radio laughing at white people, when in fact, if it wasn't for white people, Barack wouldn't be elected. He's a president for everybody, not just black people. That's the most idiotic thing ever. And black people crying saying, we did it. And black people need to stand up and be proud. Black people weren't the only ones who voted him into office. Y'all, they losing their goddamn minds out here. It's another regular president. What we need to do is read some books, and we won't have to put all our hopes and dreams in another person, you know, get ourselves together which people are doing, that's good, but I hate when people do shit like this and lose their goddamn mind over something as simple as this. You know, it's still the American system. It's still people who were in charge yesterday are in charge now. It's just the faces have changed on the outside. Relax. I'm telling you know, but I know the people who listen to the show. If you listen to Doom, you got to be a smart person. So you're not, you know, you're not going nutso over this. But yeah, hopefully this guy will do good. I think he'll do, he should do well. Maybe he won't. But I can't believe my cousin sent me that email talking about it's a new day. She told a fucking Will.i.am video, a Will.i.am on Oprah. That's the last thing I want in my mailbox, okay? Because my cousin got some sense. She's a beautiful person on the inside. I love her. I love to talk to her. But she gonna send me that, and I click onto it, and I see Will. I thought it was gonna lead me to something great. It led me to. I'll be back. I'm trying to compose myself.
Transmission, Third World War, third round. A decade of the weapon of sound above ground. Ain't no shelter if you're looking for shade. I lick shots at the brutal charade. As the polls close like a casket on truth devoured. A silent play on the shadow of power. A spectacle monopolized. The camera's eye on choice disguised. Lights out, guerrilla radio. Turn that shit up. Lights out, guerrilla radio. Turn that shit up. Was it cast for the mass who burn and toil? Or for the vultures who thirst for blood and oil? A spectacle monopolized. They hold the reins and stole your eyes. The fist of guns, bullets and bombs. Who stuff the banks, who staff the party ranks. More for gore or the son of a drug lord. None of the above, fuck it, cut the cord. Lights out, guerrilla radio. Turn that shit up. Lights out, guerrilla radio. Turn that shit up. Lights out, guerrilla radio. Turn that shit up. Guerrilla radio. Quit it now.
I'm looking at this cover of Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone has lost it. Okay, ever since the 70s, they haven't had it. Once in a while, they have good articles. In the 80s, I stopped reading magazines a long time ago. It's a waste of time. You know, popular magazines are a waste of time. But I just was looking through the internet at some articles, and there was a picture of a Rolling Stone cover. And you know it's totally not worth their time when you see on the cover the girls from the TV show The Hills. Okay, they lost their cred totally. Okay, well, they lost in the 90s when they have Friends on the cover. You're supposed to, you're Rolling Stone, you're supposed to have the edgiest, baddest ass rock artist on the cover. When you put somebody like these no talent girls from The Hills, quote-unquote reality show, on the cover of your magazine just because they get in a momentary time in the spotlight, now they're going to get to say forever that they were on the cover of Rolling Stone, and it doesn't mean anything anymore. And to further drive the point home, here are the articles that are inside the magazine that are, you know, on according to the cover of the magazine. It says inside the Queen reunion. Okay, Freddie Mercury's dead. It doesn't matter. Okay, check this out. It says, The Roots, Funky, Angry, Radical. Okay. The Roots ain't been angry, okay, since 1998 when they got their, you know, first record deal. And Radical, how do I put this? There was an article about one of the guys from the Roots. I think he's called Q Questlove, the drummer with the big afro, who is basically, he's like a poster boy for neo soul because of the afro, and he's on the drums. It's just a look. He was on the writer of the article. I thought this was unfair. Was pissed because they saw Questlove at the airport on a laptop computer with an iPhone or something like that, you know, and he was just doing his little buppy thing, and he's like, this guy is supposed to be the Roots, they're not Radical, they're not these Black Panther types, he's on an airport, you know, talking with all his business partners on these cell phones and using a Apple computer to edit his music, and it's like, dude, so because you're a rock star, you're not, and because you have some pro-black stuff in your music, you're not supposed to use technology now. I mean, I thought that was unfair. And he is a recording artist, who is popular. So of course he's going to be on the cell phone. He needs to get his business done. Shoot, you're not going to support him in the future. You're not going to. See, he's got to make his money. I thought that was so unfair. However, it's also as unfair as it is to, you know, diss him for using an iPhone, is also unfair to call him angry and radical because they're anything but, okay? They softer than New Kids on the Block. Stone Temple Pilots and Def Cab for Cutie. That's the Def Cab for Cutie is the only thing that should be on the cover, okay, of this magazine, Rolling Stone, if they wanted cred. The rest of this stuff need to be replaced. So basically, yeah, I just wanted to point that out.
Well, we're big rock singers, we got golden fingers, and we're loved everywhere we go.
That sounds like us.
We sing about beauty and we sing about truth at $10,000 a show.
Right.
We take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills, but the thrill we never know is the thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother?
Yeah.
Stone. Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone?
That's a very, very good idea.
What? Okay, so I went to the comic store. They were having a little Incredible Hulk sale because the DVD was being released and there was working with the movie company, so they had this little sale. If you wore a green shirt, you get 10% discount on everything in the store. Plus they had a whole bunch of old Hulk comic books. Since they don't really have a 25-cent bin anymore, they had all these Hulk comics that they were selling for 50 cents, you know, Frontline, World War Hulk Frontline, the Gamma Gang or whatever that's called, and the I forgot the name of it, that crap, the one where his Warbound, yeah, the Warbound comic book. Oh, that's all bad stuff. It should be 25 cent, not 50 cent. But anyway, I got some She-Hulk comic books. Yeah, I guess they were in the 50 cent bin too. And you know, I wore a green shirt, but I don't think I got my 10% discount. But I got the She-Hulk issues like 24 through 28. And it's some good stuff, man. It's Peter David written. And I recommend that you get this or the trade that has any of the She-Hulks who Peter David was. I was mad that Peter David changed the whole status quo of her comic book, She-Hulk comic, after he took over from Dan Slott. Because I thought that was a good idea what Dan Slott did. But of course, David's ego wouldn't allow him to start off where somebody else, you know, to go where somebody else started off. So he changed the whole status quo, not making sense much for her to go from a lawyer, which is what she's always been, to being a bounty hunter. Anyway, but I underestimated the talent of Peter David. This series is great with him writing at with her. I mean, it started off kind of shaky with once again her fighting Titania and Crusher Creel, the Absorbing Man, the same old standard shit. But once he got in his groove, it's working now. I'm digging it. She is She-Hulk. She lives in a trailer park with a Skrull, a good Skrull, the friendly Skrull, Jacinda the friendly Skrull is what I call her, and they're both bounty hunters. And I'm going to do a little bit of issue 24. This is whoever writes her always has to write her with a sense of humor. I like that. All the writers they got, they get it. And here, she's in Brooklyn, New York, and she's turning in, in one of her bounties, and one of the cops is giving her trouble. And I like that the art in this is great. Penciler Sean Moll, inker Victor Alazaba. Yeah, they're good. They're pretty good. Kind of reminds me of Gary Frank. And this cop is giving her a bunch of shit because she tore up a mall when she was fighting Crusher Creel. And she says, it wasn't my fault Crusher Creel decided to get involved. And he says, nah, it's never your fault. Isn't that what you super guys always say? And she says, no, cop. What we always say is we hate non-super guys sitting in judgment of us. I like that little scene. And this guy is total dick. And he was being in the way the artist draws him, he draws a cop just the way a cop should be. He's got a pointy dickhead and he looks like a fucking dick, your average New York cop. So, and for some reason I don't ever got why Jacinda, She-Hulk doesn't like changing back to her normal self, even though she can and she does sometimes. But Jacinda the Skrull always morphs into Jen Walters. So when it's time to turn somebody into the cops as Jen, it's Jacinda who's doing it, not She-Hulk. You see what I'm saying? She plays Jen Walters all the time, and She-Hulk is just remains a She-Hulk, and she just hides in the car or something. While I never got that. I don't get that. I just don't get that. This is. Thing about this, okay, she lives in a fucking trailer park with a bunch of trailer trash. You know they all racist. Okay, and then I'm gonna cut to the scene where she works for a bail bonding company, and they stick up for her even though she destroys everything. And I like the way they draw She-Hulk, okay, because the next scene she's in a bar, okay, she's dressing like a hoe, a hooker. Like her usual self. And I see Peter David does hark back a little bit to the Dan Slott comic books, and he doesn't like her being a slut, I guess, because she slept with Juggernaut. But he obviously likes that part of her character a little bit, because he's got her in a bar dressing all tarted up, and this guy Bran who has a tattoos and, a little, one of those little goatee things, looks real cheesy type of guy. He approaches her and we're thinking that he's trying to get in her pants. And he says, give me another drink for my little green friend here. And the way they got her dressing like a hussy, but she's still very built, muscles coming all out, looking very, buff, like the female bodybuilders, and that's just how she would look, except there's unrealistic. I just noticed that she has big titties, even though she's cut and muscular. Most of those women who are built like that don't their titties go down to a man size almost, so that's unrealistic. But hey, she's the She-Hulk, she's super, okay? So this guy is still pushing, and he's trying to push up on her and get in her pants, so we think. And she's just like, no, I feel like being left alone right now. And it's like, he points out exactly what we're thinking. Okay, you're coming to a public bar looking like that, and you when you can look like that in private or look normal in public. It, because she's she has on some kind of belly, you know, it's like a leather belly bra. That's what it looks like. A belly, you see her, it's a belly shirt, but it's a leather, and it straps that hold together in the front so you can see her titties and everything. Yeah, she's dressed like a hoe, like she wants to get effed. Okay, just like a woman. So that makes this realistic, and the more realistic it is, the more good it is. But this guy turns out to be a terrorist, and he shows her a remote control. He said, basically he's saying, you want attention because you dress like a hoe, but I'm gonna give you some attention. You know, I'm gonna make it so you are the center of attention. And he pushes a button and it blows up the building like a Oklahoma City bombing, which is probably in bad taste because that's what this picture looks exactly like. Now, this is another side story. Okay, she goes and rescues all the people. That's what happens there. Okay, but my point is, how could she be a hero and she could feel like a hero when basically the guy was after her? He was fucking with her. So all these innocent lives that were lost in this explosion and all the people who were injured was because of her, the She-Hulk. Indirectly, I mean, she didn't make it happen, but in this world of superheroes, the supervillains come out because of the superheroes. And that's what you see more and more in the comics these days. They're not going saving the day, saving the average man. They are the reason why the average man is in danger, because the average man is usually in a line of fire of the superhero. Okay, so they just need to stop calling these people heroes and just say, let's just have our science fiction comic books with a lot of violence. Because these characters aren't heroes necessarily. And there's a side story about one of the girls in the trailer park. Jacinda is friends with her, and the girl, she's all pissed off and angry because her dad doesn't pay her any attention, or she doesn't even seem like her dad likes her because he's always arguing with her, always yelling at her, always pointing out her faults. And the way that Jacinda decides to, well, okay, we cut from the scene where those two are talking about how this girl's father is all mean to her and doesn't appreciate her. Okay, and we go to the father's house. Somebody knocks at the door. It's a cop, and he tells the guy that his daughter is dead, and she was hit. She was in a hit and run, and they had a pretty good description of the van, from witnesses, including his wife. So his wife was there, and his wife is at the precinct filling out the forms. And he says, and the guy breaks down. Okay, he breaks down and starts crying. No, my baby daughter. Okay, cut to the end where he's sitting there drinking. Okay, a scene where he's drinking, and the girl, the wife, and the girl, of course, the girl and her mother were in no danger at all. They were just at the mall. And they just came back home. And they say, hey, honey, we're home. And he's sitting there with a bottle of Jack Daniels, you know, with his head in his hands. And he says, you're home? You're both home? And he runs up to his daughter and hugs her. Okay, this is the point. I like Peter David's little lack of realism here. Instead of going down to police station with the police or expecting his wife to give him a call that their daughter was just killed, he's sitting there with a bottle of Jack Daniels with his head in his hands, not going to try to find the wife, not going to try to find more details of what's going on, just taking the cop's word for it. Okay, why would a cop show up at your house when the wife, you know, knows what's going on and she's going to inform you, she's going to call you? Doesn't make sense, of course, but this idiot falls for it, and then he starts hugging his girl, his little girl, and his little girl, she cries. He says, honey, you know I love you so much, don't you? don't you? Instead of him yelling and screaming and saying, somebody told me that you are dead, he just says, I've been sitting here thinking about a world without you in it, and now you're here, and you know I love you, honey. And she says, of course, Daddy. And she starts crying, because that's how you foster appreciation in your loved ones, by somebody lying to you and saying that your loved one was just killed. And then when you actually see they're alive, you appreciate it more. And of course, we find out the cop was Jacinda, and she was, because and the reason this doesn't make sense, because she told him in broad daylight, and now it's night, so he was sitting there for hours, probably stewing in his own juices. He really is a horrible father. But then again, they do live in a trailer park, and Jacinda, or the cop, you see the black cop, Jacinda still dressed up as a black cop. And she goes into her trailer. She wasn't concerned that nobody would see her. She goes into the trailer and she turns back to Jacinda. And we know, it was Jacinda. She was like a guardian angel for this family. Then, reminded of her own dad, she picks up a little device, a little holographic device. And we see Jacinda looking at her own, a picture of her own squirrel father. It's a message from him, a holographic message. And he says, Jacinda, I have every faith that somehow this message will reach you. I want you to remember these words, and I want them to sear themselves into your heart. You are a traitor to me and to your race. You are no longer a daughter of mine, and if I ever find you, I will kill you. So wherever you are, pray we never meet again. Then Jacinda puts her head down and cries, and it is the end of the comic. And I love it. And I can only hope that in the real world there are many women crying in as much horrible situations as Jacinda is. The fucking bitches. I love that scene. But anyway, I am interested in reading some more the current She-Hulks, because I want to know what happens to Jacinda when Secret Invasion goes down. That's got to be good, especially when it's written by Peter David. And then the rest of these issues, 25 to 28 or whatever, good issues. It's implausible. They meet up with an alien guy. It's basically like Terminator. It's this alien guy who Jacinda, he's green just like them, but I don't think he's a Skrull. And so you got all these green people in the one comic. He's on a run from another green creature, a Badoon. Badoons made their, I think, their first appearance in the Defenders comic. They're like worse than Skrulls, okay? Like Team Mafia said once, they have their spine on their front, across their chest, and there's some ugly green creatures. You know, they're vicious, they're evil, but this one isn't necessarily evil. He's a bounty hunter, and he's after the guy the green guy, who is a handsome Brad Pitt looking guy, but he's actually a killer, and it's improbable that they would all meet up, okay? But She-Hulk doesn't want to protect the green guy, but he's such a good guy, Jacinda wants to protect him against the evil Badoon. Of course, we're supposed to think that the Badoon is evil, but he's not. He's just a bounty hunter. And the guy they're protecting, Kazon, even though he looks like a green Brad Pitt, he's actually a mass murderer. So the Badoon looks cool in this comic. He looks real cool. And he's fighting the She-Hulk. And and two other people get involved because they're out in the woods. And the Kazon, one runs across and kills a woman. It's like a woman and a man. They're going out on their little camping trip to get away from their kids. And that's a good endorsement for being a parent. But anyway, to go to a camping trip to get away from your kids, when you usually families go to camping trips together. But I guess Peter David didn't want to endanger the kids, because the wife is killed by Kazon. And the husband is put through a whole bunch of fucking ordeal. And at one point, when the Badoon, Jacinda and the human wife are killed by Kazon, but Jacinda, she can't die. that's one of her, that's her secret, and we don't know why she can't die, and we're supposed to find out later why she can't die, which, and her, the reason she can't die is the reason, is the same reason that she's wanted by her people and why she was disowned by her family. So, but she won't say what happened, you know, and why that is. But anyway, the Badoon, he wants information about Kazan, who kidnapped, Kazan kidnaps the husband and kills the wife. So Badoon, they have this technology where they can bring a person back to life for only for, you know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, or whatever, half hour. And they do that, so they, you know, the technology is there to only just keep them alive for only a little while. But they use that technology, so if somebody is murdered and they get them to the scene in time, they can make them come alive, and they can tell them, give them all the information they need to give them before they die again. But humans aren't, you know, don't know about this technology. So he brings the wife back to life, and she's like, "What happened?" I was, first of all, she's not scared that she's face to face with a Badoon, but second of all, she wanna know where her husband is and what's going on. And she said, he, she talking about, she thought Kazan was gonna kill her. And I like this scene, cause the Badoon says, "Oh, he did kill you." And she says, "No, you're not funny." He says, "I'm not trying to be. He killed you. I brought you back temporarily." Okay, now, it's, if you bring somebody back to life temporarily and they don't know that they were killed and that they're going to die again in a few minutes, and you, what, you want to get information from them, it's not a good idea to tell them that they're going to die again in a few minutes. Just let them think what they want to think and get your information. But it's like a dummy, just produce, "Oh, you're back temporarily. I energize your molecules, but they'll soon lose cohesion. It's an inevitable side effect. So you all, you tell me all you can as quickly as you can before you die." Now, did Kazan have allies? Did he have weapons? And this bitch starts going crazy. "I don't want to die. I want to see my babies. I want to see my husband. Oh my God. Oh my God." Okay. And the Badoon is just going to say, "I can't get no information out of her." And he pulls his gun up to shoot her. And of course, She-Hulk stops him. And I like this too. He shoots his laser off. She-Hulk knocks the gun up in the air. And they're talking shit at each other. She said, "I'm just gonna, she's gonna die anyway, so I might as well kill her." And he says, "Have a little compassion," She-Hulk says. And as they're saying this, a raccoon falls out of a tree, burning ablaze, because when he shot the laser up in the air, he shot a raccoon. I'm like, that's cold blooded. You ain't have to do that. You did not have to do that, okay? But they did. So anyway, and I don't know why this reminds me of a story when I was in high school. It's more than a story. A girl who I hated, she was a bitch, but she was in the car with three other girls who were nice girls. I didn't have nothing against them. I didn't know them very well, but they seemed like nice girls. And she was driving down a road fast, and there was a raccoon went into the street. She went to swerve, and I'm surprised because this is a mean, nasty bitch. I would have thought she just hit the raccoon, but she swerved. The car ran off the road, and she got out unscathed. Of course, the bitchiest one gets out unscathed, and the other three girls weren't unscathed. One of them, the cutest one, who was real nice, I liked her. She got a broken wrist. The other nice one, who was really, really nice, got her arm missing, so she lost an arm. And the third girl, who was the nicest and most, you know, cheerful of all of them, died. So that shows you how life is. The bitchiest bitch lives, and the nicer you get, the more fucked up you get till you die, the nicest one dies. And that's cold. That is cold. And my friend Tom Gleason had the nerve, who is a horror filmmaker had the nerve to tell me, because if we all went to high school together, he, at the time, he said, that'd be fucked up if, you know, the raccoon, she lost, you know, went through all this shit, killed her friends for a raccoon, and then the ambulance and EMS workers who rolled up on the scene, hit and squashed the raccoon, which that didn't happen, but that in his dark mind, that's what he thought that was funny. Anyway, back to this story here. So this was the second storyline, the second or third storyline in Peter David Hawk run. And of course there's a big old fight, and the ending of that is satisfying, and it's all in one issue. See, there's a story arcs here. There's connecting tissues of each of the stories, but you can read one and not have to read the other. Okay, like this one here was basically a number 24, the one I went over for you, that it had this little self-contained story there, but the guy who blew up the building, she saved a bunch of people, and there's a little sub story there about one of the people that she saved. Okay, that's all connected. That's all in issue 24. Now the guy who blew up the building, they're gonna go take care of him or get into his storyline like three issues later. So, but you can still read this story and be it might interest you in reading the next issues, or to come back to find out who this guy is who blew up the bar. But you don't need to. You got your own little story here, self-contained story in this issue. Now the other one I'm reading to you, with the Badoon, that's two parts really, and even though it ends in this issue, the next issue connects where, okay, She-Hulk and Jacinda go off to, they get the hell out of Dodge because, they just want to get out of that town. But on the way out, they find out the husband, okay, is being blamed because they rescue the two humans and they take care of the Kazan, and the Badoon takes off. Okay. And it's a pretty cool story. So the husband, and there's a touching scene at the end. Let me finish that story for you first. The woman wants to kill Kazan because Kazan is captured, and she pulls up the Badoon's laser, is about to blow him away, and She-Hulk stops her because she's a good guy and she can't let anybody get killed. And the woman starts to discorporate, and she tells her husband as she's dying her last wishes, and that she loves him, and that she tell the kids that I love them, and etc. etc. And then she just evaporates in her husband's arms. Then Kazan had the nerve to start talking shit, and he knows She-Hulk's not going to kill him. But Jacinda, who we thought was a goody two-shoes, walks up behind Kazan and just jams her hand right through his body, okay, like the Vision, except she's not intangible, and she rips his heart out. So that lets you know that she's a badass. She's not to be effed with, even though she, she's a nice sidekick all through these issues. But she's like, She-Hulk can't kill you, but I don't have no problem with doing it. So I thought that was cool. But even though that story was a two-parter and it ends there, the next issue is a self-contained story, but it's connected to the previous issues where Larry goes back home and he's without his wife, and he just said aliens killed her. And of course, all that's going to get you is in jail for the murder of your wife. And that's where he ends up in jail, and so, his kids is taken away from him, of course, because he's in jail. But She-Hulk finds out about this, and she has to go back to exonerate him. And this is a great story because at the end, she calls on help from the female lawyer from the dance slot run. Okay, and that lady comes when she walks in the courtroom. The lawyers from the slot run. I'm trying to think. Yeah, Mallory Book of Goodman, Leiber, and Kurtzberg and Book. So that's the old firm that She-Hulk used to work for. And I'm cheering. I'm like, yay, because she comes in to save the day. The all badass in this little hick town with her and her, and her backup, her guys in suits. And Tony Stark makes an appearance too. And I have to give props to Peter David because he doesn't totally throw out the Dan Slott continuity. He doesn't totally forget about it. He brings it back to that, and so that got to show you that he did has something to appreciate out of Dan Slott's run, and he didn't totally, you know, he's not totally an asshole, because it totally works in this story. And then there's another issue, you know, that brings the next issue deals with the guy who blew up the building, and that's an interesting issue too. Okay, so I recommend the She-Hulk. I recommend all the She-Hulks. This is a good comic book. This is a real comic book. It's, they don't have 6-issue story arcs that you gotta buy every issue to fucking get. No, it's self-contained story. That's what comic books is supposed to be. Okay, and that's all I gotta say on that. She-Hulk, recommended by Doom.